Welcome back in everyone to another fantastic new episode of Whisper in the Wings. We're continuing our coverage of the New York City Fringe Festival. Today we kick off part two of our exploration into the New York City Fringe Festival, and we're returning to one of the three venues under St. Mark's. The New York City Fringe Festival runs April 3rd through the 21st at Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We are so excited to be bringing you coverage of this festival once again. It's an incredible, incredible event. You must come out and check it. There's something for everyone here. And on today's episode, we are joined by a little bit of a smaller house than we have been, but nonetheless, equally amazing. We have the artists Kara Haddon, Adam LeBeau, and Sean Griffin joining us today to talk to us about their work. So let us go ahead and welcome in our guests. Everyone, welcome in to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am so excited to have the three of you here. But I'm so excited to learn more about your shows. These all sound fantastic. So, Kara, can we start with you and have you tell us a little bit about your show, Sonnets from a Sin Eater?
Yeah, totally. So Sonnets from a Sin Eater is a multimedia solo play that I wrote and am performing in, and my friend Jack is directing. And it's about a Gen Z lesbian who basically starts a TikTok business where she live streams herself eating a bunch of food in order to uncancel celebrities. And so the show initially emerged from a sequence of seven Shakespearean sonnets that I wrote a few years ago on this ancient ritual called sin eating, which was practiced globally. But basically, the rendition that we're working with originated in Wales. And what would happen is that when a family member of a wealthy family usually passed away, the family would hire a sin eater to come to the funeral and eat a meal of food off of the chest of the dead person. And the idea was that by doing that, the sin eater would take on the sins of the person who had died and absolve them. And so then the person who had died could go to heaven and the sin eater would be carrying all of the sins. So the sonnets were based on that idea. And then the rest of the play, which is kind of the plot that I just explained, were sort of written around the sonnets using those sort of as prologues to each scene. And it's sort of a contemporary exploration of this ritual.
Wow, what a fascinating work background. I mean, I had no idea about this. I literally am sitting here going, go on, tell me all about this eating thing.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's insane, but that's wonderful. Adam LeBeau, you have this great show, Fanatical Optimism. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's a part comic rant, part heartfelt lament, in which I look at the state of the world and, like everyone, ask, how did we get here? And if you can imagine that as a giant crime scene, I find a hell of a lot of my generation's fingerprints on it.
Oh, that is definitely a fascinating work. I can't wait to hear that. Sean Griffin, you have the show Solitary. Why don't you tell us about that?
So unfortunately, a little less funny sounding than Kara or Adams, but this is a show where the stage is in effect a solitary confinement cell. And the actor, Casimir Gregory, who I'm very lucky to be directing, is just trying to get through half an hour of his solitary confinement. And it starts with basically the beginning of it is his dinner and sprinkling, and this is based off of an inmate's story in solitary, is sprinkling his breadcrumbs under his bed to attract a mouse that he named, but this time the mouse isn't coming. And so it's this set of kind of three monologues to this mouse who has not appeared, and that sort of need for companionship and company. And the whole point of it is we don't know why he's in prison. We don't know why he's in solitary. because that's not important. What's important is that we kind of connect with his humanity. And this is kind of written in response to a lot of events, but recent Eric Adams, you know, not making solitary confinement illegal, which was on the table recently. So fun stuff.
That is very fascinating. The minute you mentioned solitary confinement, I was like, oh boy, here we go. We're going to dive into the mind of someone in it and the horrors that people face. I mean, it's a lot. Well, listeners, as you can hear, we've got another set of fascinating works, and I want to dive more into these. So Adam, I'm going to start with you on this. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's been like developing Fanatical Optimism?
Oh, it's been an exciting ride. It began in Kathy Reinking's class. She's a renowned casting director who left that line of work and moved to Atlanta and went into coaching and writing and directing on her own. And she created a class for actors called Create Your Own Content. And I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I enrolled. And she asked, when launching into developing this, who are your heroes who do solo work? And of course, you know, for your listener viewers who are into solo work, sing it with me, people. You probably have the same list. Anna Deavere Smith, Eric Bogosian, Lily Tomlin, John Leguizamo, Whoopi Goldberg. But for me, first and foremost is Spalding Gray. And I had the pleasure of seeing him live before he took his own life. And you can see his work immortalized in the film version of Swimming to Cambodia. And so Kathy said, all right, well then do your Spalding Gray. And in his work, he just sat in a chair on a stage with a little wooden table in front of him, his notebook and a glass of water. And that was the show, him talking. And I don't sit down, I'm too ADD for that. I do my show standing up. But that was what I was trying to do. And that's what the work that she shepherded from me was, just finding my own take on what I see and developing that into a show.
That is incredible. That sounds wonderful. Sean, I want to come back to you, and I want to know more about, you know, what it's been like developing solitary.
Depressing. So as I'm sure you can guess by my name, I'm of Irish heritage, and I'm from, like, I have an Irish Quaker background. And so for me, there's this sense of like responsibility, because Quakers were the ones who developed solitary confinement, which is a surprise. I know, we all thought it was the Catholics, but it was, you know, going into the research side of it, it was finding audio tracks of solitary confinement wings, because everybody kind of expects it to be really, really quiet, and it is not. It's people kicking doors, it's people howling, it's people doing a lot just to kind of basically be like, I'm here, you know. So yeah, you know, it was reading, you know, Our Prison's Obsolete, which I feel like everybody should read. So, you know, a lot of that kind of, a lot of reading basically, and a lot of listening and hearing people's stories and hearing people who are exonerated give their stories of solitary confinement. And that's really important too, because I think that's easier for people to relate to, because suddenly it's like, oh, it's an injustice. And just hearing like people who 5 years later, they still wake up crying. So I just wanted to kind of use this as a platform to kind of show the humanity of the people involved and let the audience connect with and be uncomfortable. So the development of that was very much that. And, you know, I cast my friend Casimir Gregory. I mean, we've known each other for a long time, and we had a friend who was a brilliant director, and sadly he passed away. And so that means that, you know, keeping it in the family, I'm directing the show, because I'm more of a writer, as I'm sure anyone hearing me talk could guess. And yeah, so it's been a trudge, but it's also been, It hasn't told me anything I didn't know, but that doesn't mean it wasn't worth researching, because it's just essential reading. It's essential knowledge of what we do to each other.
Yeah. Wow, what a journey there. Kara, bring us home on this question. What has it been like developing your show Sonnets from a Sin Eater?
It's been a process of working through various different forms of media to kind of come to this show, which I think merges a lot because we have the Shakespearean sonnet, which obviously feels super antiquated, especially to put on stage. And to sort of, I think a large part of the process was I had written the sonnets initially to exist on the page as like a poetic project. And then I received feedback in a workshop I was in that they were super theatrical and it would be interesting to stage them. And so a large part of the process has been like figuring out how to make text that's heightened and dense accessible to somebody who's just hearing it the first time. And I think that's why I've chosen to pair it with this like contemporary exploration of the themes. And so the media there is kind of more solo performance and then what it's like to sort of stage like internet interactions. And what that looks like in this show is kind of this character who is addressing the audience and then starts a FaceTime relationship with one of the celebrities who's projected behind her. And so there's also dialogue in it, even though it's obviously like just one performer. And so I think arriving at those three different media has allowed like the content of the show to kind of shine through. But it's sort of been a years-long process because, again, the sonnets were written from like 2020 to 2022. And then I wrote the play last year, 2023, and workshopped it a bit. And then I've kind of been finalizing this like new version of it. Yeah, but it's been really fun. I feel like it works many different parts of my brain, which is really cool.
Awesome.
If I may tack something on to your question, just I am imagining a good chunk of your audience are themselves theater makers, not just theater fans. And to kind of, I don't know, hearten them, because I know it can seem daunting and, you know, to so many dead ends. I just want to add how the show ended up where it is now, starting from where I left off. And it's just a story of how you never know how things are going to go. After I developed the first draft, Kathy created a performance series for her students from Create Your Own Content to do their showcase their work called In My Shoes, since so much of it is autobiographical. In My Shoes evokes that. And so she had this ongoing series in Atlanta. Well, guess what happened right after I did its first In My Shoes performance? A little something called the COVID-19 pandemic. So in the drawer it went, never to be heard from again. And then as an outgrowth of the pandemic, a lot of us spent a lot of time online. I ended up spending a lot of time on Clubhouse. I don't know if you're familiar with that app. And there was a room in there about networking for the entertainment industry. And one day in early 22, there was a lot of conversation that had several points of resonance and echo with what I was doing had been doing with the piece. And I humbly asked, this is very strange, but could I maybe do a passage from this piece I wrote? Because everything that you're talking about today, I talk about in here. And it was towards the end of the room session. Oh, sure. And I ended up doing that. And the feedback was astonishingly positive. It encouraged me to take it back out of the drawer. I asked Kathy to put me in the next live edition of In My Shoes post-pandemic. Someone else in that room was one of the godfathers of comedy, a man named Bob Sumner. He asked me to do an excerpt in two different comedy showcases of his. And then I moved back to New York, reconnected with a dear friend, Spider Duncan Christopher, who's a theater veteran from way back, who embraced it and has become one of my champions. He has now directed the newest version of the piece, and now we're in the festival, and we've done it twice already in New York, several times in Atlanta. And it's just a story of how I didn't plan any of that, is my point. it can happen in ways that you don't know. So just do the best work you can and get it out there.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. That is a great idea to pass on. Sean, with the show you have, the subject matter you're dealing with, what is the message or thought you're hoping the audiences take away from your piece?
Well, I mean, considering currently about 45% of the eligible voters are millennial or Gen Z, and those two generations are showing to be more policy driven than party, I just want us to continue to, you know, whether it's regardless of generation, I want us to think of policy. I want us to think of ways in which we can have a more humane justice system. And so that's why I wanted to just focus on this one small corner of carceral programs and go from there. And at the plays, we have four performances, and in each performance, I just would encourage, we're going to have a petition to go to Eric Adams to reconsider his stance on solitary confinement. He likely won't, but the point of it is to put it out there. And, you know, anywhere we're going to perform this show, we're going to petition that. So, I mean, that's the main message, is that each and every one of us is human. Each and every life is of the same value. And we, I don't know whether it's capitalism or what, you know, we're constantly trying to put one life above another. And I'm just not going to have it.
No, I think that's fantastic. And I applaud you, especially with this petition. I think that's wonderful, not only entertaining the audience, but also getting them engaged. That's really fantastic.
I think that's the beautiful thing about theater is, you know, everybody's constantly wondering like why we hang on to or cling to theater. And I think it's that. It's to put people in the face of something directly. And in so doing, we can alter the performance every time. Like, you can watch your favorite movie every time. The movie will stay the same, but it's you who changes. But theater, even if you're aiming for the same performance, you're not going to get the same performance every time. And that's the beautiful thing about it.
No, I think that's wonderful. Carol, what about you? What is the message or thought you hope audiences take away from your piece?
Yeah, I think less than sort of one message, I'm hoping to present an exploration of three different people, like three different Gen Z people living in a world that can, living under cancel culture, basically. And there are three different attitudes toward guilt and forgiveness within that.
I love it. Adam, what about you? What is the message or thought you hope that audiences take away from your piece?
Yeah, I think I stop just shy of message and I leave it at the level of provocation. So as we look at the state of the world, and everybody might have a somewhat different take, but we all have some sort of anxiety. We know that there's some aspect of all of this that's got all the makings of dumpster fire, right? So how do we respond? Do we take it in and look inward and see that all we can do is love each other and ourselves and our families and do the best we can in our day-to-day lives? Or do we take it on and confront what we see happening at the potential for great sacrifice?
I love that. Adam, I'm going to start with you on our final question for this first part, and that is, who do you hope have access to fanatical optimism?
I think it's twofold. So on one side, my generation and older, so that together we go through a process of self-examination, taking of responsibility and accountability. And then on the other, younger generations, which I would say are millennial, Gen Z, and what are they calling it now? Gen Alpha. At least that I want them to know that at least one of us, me, knows that it was us that did this, and at least one of us is not trying to deal with it by leaving you holding the bag. I take great offense at people of my generation who go, it's up to the young people now. It's no, we're the ones in power. We should be managing this and doing what needs to be done. And so I want them to understand where this came from and that at least somebody gets whose responsibility it is, and we're not dumping it on you.
I love that. Sean, who do you hope have access to Solitary?
Obviously, like, similar to Adam's answer, everybody. But, like, at the same point, there are populations who probably don't need to see this. You know, people of the global majority, they don't need to see this. People of oppressed or marginalized groups, they don't need to see this. We know this. We've been experiencing it historically. We see it. You know, I'd love people to still come, and I'd love people to still, you know, hold me up. If it doesn't ring true to marginalized groups, hold me up on it. But I want to invite people who think prison is a good idea. I want to invite people who think that, you know, once you commit a crime, you're not a person, you know, things like that. Like the people who think that prisoners shouldn't be allowed to vote in elections, people, you know, things like that. And so there is that. I mean, I also want the play to be accessible. So it will be available streaming. And for like, I'm set it at like a $5 streaming cost. Like, I just want people to be able to see it. You know, I have low ticket prices. I have low streaming prices. It's obviously not about money. So I want this to be as accessible as possible, just in general. I know Under St. Mark's is difficult because, and we didn't choose this, we didn't build the building, but you know, there are stairs and I don't believe it's elevator accessible. So people with mobility issues, you know, that can be difficult. So I do want to also encourage to watch it streaming, because, you know, if the theater is difficult to access, I don't want the show to be.
Well put. Love that. Finally, Kara, who do you hope have access to Sonnets from a Sin Eater?
Yeah, I mean, of course, like, similar to what Adam and Sean were saying, I think that there is something for everyone to find entertaining and interesting, or at least I hope. I think that kind of the target audience for this play is kind of a group of people of my generation who maybe are like more, I guess it's targeted toward people who are on social media and are big users of social media and are sort of the ones perpetrating the culture that dominates those spaces, a culture that I think like has pros and cons, like every culture, but I think that is like becoming increasingly politically important. And I also think I would love for poetry lovers to see this show. And I guess on the flip side of that, people who are sort of interested in experimental theater and how that can be merged with media culture and social media.
Please listen carefully.
The second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pick your brains, if you will. And I want to ask the three of you my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
I could start because I have a recent one that's pretty cracking good. Recently, I believe it was in November, the Irish Repertory Theater is putting on a bunch of Brian Friel's plays. And I got to see them put on his play Translations, which was like the first time I think it was put on in New York in quite a while, 20 something years. So basically it wasn't something I would have had access to in my lifetime. So it was once in my lifetime kind of thing. And it was extraordinary. And it was one of those plays where you walk away from and you're like, yes, that is good theater. So that's mine. Not exciting, but good.
No, that's a great memory. What a great show that was. Love it. Thank you.
I feel like a recent favorite theater memory that comes to mind that sort of relates to that is that I saw Tornobeldorf, which was an opera at Prototype this January. And it was a Ukrainian opera that I guess I just transferred Prototype. And it was like 3.5 hours long with no intermission, maybe 2.5 hours long. I'm thinking of a different show. It was 2.5 hours long, no intermission. And I was like, what is this going to be? Like, because I didn't know it was that long when I got the ticket. I feel like I can have an attitude that's like, let's get that. My attention span isn't going to be able to handle things like that. And also, something I didn't know until I saw it was that none of it was in English and there were no subtitles. But it was my favorite show that I've seen all year. It was incredible. And I think it just inspired me so much that basically it's about, it's kind of an abstracted post-apocalyptic society, definitely with like overtones of what's happening in Ukraine right now, although it was written before the war started, or they've been touring it before, but obviously those overtones are there now. But I was like so captivated and moved, and I was so inspired by the fact that they were able to hold me and just take me along for the ride for such a long period of time without the grounding of like telling me in language what was happening. It was really just like atmospheric, and it was like an incredible, incredible use of the tools of theater, I thought. And so that was like, because I can be very language driven and sort of think of that as like the way forward. And so it was really, really moving to see something that I had no access to, like the literal meaning of the language, and still be so moved.
That is a wonderful memory though. Thank you for that. And Adam, bring us home with this. What is your favorite theater memory?
Well, it's going to sound like I'm just trying to tell an adorable story, but it actually was very illuminating for me. So I was a musical theater kid growing up. I went to a musical theater summer camp, and I was in a production of Godspell, the great Stephen Schwartz musical. And many who stage Godspell often leave off this part, the prologue, in which there is this enumeration by theologians and philosophers across the ages in musical form, and then they come together contrapuntally in this cacophony of different ideas of truth and spirituality and beingness and all of that, and then it resolves into the what really is the opening number. So we did it at camp, and our director had us start in the house like we were just audience members. We were in regular street dress, and we just were in the house, and then he had one by one each of us stand up as our philosopher or theologian and sing our part, and then we then make our way to the stage and the show begins. After the show, I was talking to the girl who was sitting next to me in the house at the beginning, and she said to me, when you leapt up and started singing, I didn't know what was going on. I was going to stand up and sing. I didn't know what that was. And I got it at that moment, what theater is capable of, that this person can just be swept up in it. And she almost leapt to her feet to sing along with us. She had no idea what was going on. And that kind of personal, intimate, inspiring connection revealed itself to me there. And I've never forgotten that.
That is a wonderful memory. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you all so much for those wonderful memories. Those were all so wonderful. My final question for today is, if our listeners would like more information about any of your shows or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? And Kara, let's start with you and the Sonnets from a Sin Eater.
Yeah, totally. You can find me on Instagram at KR Haddon. And then the theater company that's presenting it, La Trobe, which I'm a part of, is at La 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 Trobe, TROBE. So DM on Instagram, I'll totally reply. And then my website is my name, karahaddon.com, KARAHADDEN. Would love to hear from you.
Fabulous. Adam LeBeau and Fanatical Optimism. How about you?
NY Adam L, New York Adam L on Instagram. You can look me up as Adam LeBeau on Facebook. Those are my two platforms. I too have a website, adamlebeau.com. But one of my side hustles is I do web design. So in a classic case of who cuts the barber's hair, I haven't updated my website in forever. So I'll get on that, but it's not there yet. So stick to social media.
I love it. And finally, Sean Griffin with Solitary. How about you?
So I don't have a website, but you can find me on Instagram at Sean Grifter, SeanGrifter. And for the play itself, it's at Solitary the Play. Yeah, and you can, the Solitary the Play one, I'm not a great social media user in general. So it's very underdeveloped. Don't go in with high expectations. And even my own writer Instagram, again, don't go in with high expectations. It's like, if I'm getting poetry published or anything like that, you'll see it there. And if you want to see my political opinions, go on my stories. That's it. That's the, you know, it's not super exciting.
Oh, that's fantastic. All the same. Well, Kara, Adam, Sean, thank you all so much for taking the time to speak with me today and sharing these wonderful works, which are part of a greater festival. This only adds to the greatness that is the New York City Fringe. So I appreciate all of you and your time today. Thank you so much. My guests today have been three of the performers that are part of the New York City Fringe Festival, which is happening April 3rd through the 21st at Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc, and you definitely should head over there right now and do so. Join us to take in a show this upcoming season. It's an incredible festival. You've heard we've got three more incredible shows that we can't wait to share with you as well, live at the theater. But get your tickets now, frigid.nyc, for the New York City Fringe Festival, April 3rd through the 21st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones,
unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.